This podcast replay is brought to you by EssentialMovingExperts.com. 5-star rated. 25 years of experience in the moving business. Family owned and operated. They offer free 30-day storage. Fully licensed, bonded, and insured. Mention the Big O and get $150 off. Moving was never so easy. EssentialMovingExperts.com.
Yes, we are ready to rock around the state. Good evening, gentlemen. Are you all doing well out there?
Doing awesome.
I love it. I love it. First of all, I'd be remiss if I did not mention all of our Floridians throughout the state that are going through a rough time on the West Coast and Central Florida and up into the East Coast of Florida and obviously other parts, even into the Carolinas. Our thoughts and prayers are with you, and anything that you can do to help out your fellow Floridian get through a very brutal time. And unfortunately, these storms affect everyone in the state because we've all been through these experiences. So I just know that on behalf of everybody here on the panel today, we're thinking of you as always. And hopefully this will get your mind off of it for State of Florida Gridiron Roundtable. You know, I figured this week, I like to go with the team that makes the biggest headlines and the biggest accomplishment and all that. And Miami was off. Florida State ended up losing. But, you know, we talked about this. You know, Kevin, this is a game that was played like at Sandals or something like that. So, you know, I was thinking if you never punt in a game, does it really happen? You know what I'm saying?
So exactly. Like if a tree falls in the woods, is it and nobody hears it, is it really, you know, does the tree really fall? It's kind of that same concept, right? Was kind of a glorified scrimmage for the Gators for sure.
Was it the Globetrotters against the Generals? You know what I'm saying? You know, that's kind of what I felt like there. So we're going to start off with Manny because what the hell? He's covering a hot seat right now. And well, not that Mario is on a hot seat. I mean, it's just a whole bunch of a hot mess. How about that instead of that? That's what it is, a hot mess. So let's start off this week, obviously, off Manny. Let's talk about it because lots of controversy. And, you know, we love the quarterback argument all over the country. That's our favorite argument at every level of football. And so, well, would they go with Jake? Would they leave Tyler behind after a rough start here? And the word is Mario is going to stand by his man. All right. And so talk to us a little bit about what's going on behind the scenes. What kind of rumblings are going on? What kind of fingers are being pointed? Who is looking in the mirror and taking blame, too, for some of the struggles on this offensive side of the ball?
Well, I mean, look, you can point the finger at a lot of different people, certainly. Miami fans love to do that, right? They're going to point at everybody they can. Usually it's the coordinator, and in this case, so many of them are pointing at Josh Gattis saying, look, he's the Broyles Award winner. You got to adapt your offense to your quarterback. But I will say this, and you and I talked about this earlier today, Big O, Mario Cristobal has to sign off on everything that Josh Gattis is calling. So clearly, he's got the coach's blessing to run this offense and to run it the way that he's doing it. I think the problem right now, whether Miami fans want to accept this or not, is that Tyler Van Dyke has not looked like himself throwing the football. Forget about reading defenses, just getting the ball to receivers. It's been a problem. First, it was those guys dropping it. Now, against Middle Tennessee State 2 weeks ago, it was really just him missing guys that were open. And so, look, he's battling a lot. They've got to make this offense a little bit easier for him and everybody else to just move the football down the field, get in the end zone, score points. You would think North Carolina would be the perfect remedy, right? They're the worst defense in the ACC in terms of giving up points and yards. But Miami's banged up. They're banged up. They've got guys hurt left and right. You may only have one healthy scholarship running back in this game. So there's going to be a lot of pressure on Tyler to deliver this week. And I think, this is a do or die week for Miami football. I think if they lose this game, this season could spiral out of control and become one of those, you know, 5-7, 4-8 type years.
Wow, that's tough. Manny, I'm curious, is there anything wrong with Van Dyke physically, or is this just an issue of, getting accustomed to a new coordinator after Lashie last year? What could be kind of the, you know, impetus of some of his struggles? But when you're talking about accuracy, that comes to mind to me that maybe there's a physical issue.
Well, I put Mario Cristobal on the spot, and I asked him, is there something mechanically wrong with the way Tyler's throwing the football? Because a lot of, you know, film pundits out there who study this stuff want to point out, you know, hey, look, his elbow looks like it's being dropped in a different way, or it's being held up at a different position than he did last year. His throwing motion's a little different. I know this. I know that they have tried to tweak a little bit with his throwing motion, because he was kind of throwing the ball a little sidearm last year. But look, the bottom line is you have an entire offseason to do all this kind of stuff. He went through spring football. He didn't have any problems throwing the ball. He wasn't the guy everybody was complaining about. It was the receivers dropping passes in spring ball and in fall camp. So to me, that's not a worthwhile excuse. And Mario kind of dismissed it as well. I think this is about him making the right reads and then getting the football to where it's supposed to go. And he's got to get the job done this week, because Miami can't afford to fall to 2-3. And to really, I think, just have the wind taken out of their sails, because we've seen this team do it before. One loss turns into two losses, quickly turns into three losses and four and so forth. So I think this is a pivotal week for Miami.
Yeah, it could be scary this week, especially against that offense of North Carolina. And we'll get into that when we get into the matchups here. All right, Kevin. So I asked you after this 52-7 win over Eastern Washington, if you never punted in a game, did it really happen? Well, if your quarterback averages 45 yards a rush, did the game ever really happen, by the way? I'm just wondering, you know what I'm saying? No, in all seriousness, in a game like this, I thought what was really cool was Jalen Kitna coming out to play. And, you know, we talk about the bloodlines and we talk about all that stuff. But to me, the thing that stood out is – when Billy Napier mentioned the word that, I got to tell you, excites me with quarterbacks, okay? Almost to the point of sexually, I got to say. And I'm serious. We're good disturbing here, but that's what we do here on the gridiron, okay? We get raw. Yeah. And so, you know, one of the things, because, you know, we have this size queen issue with us in quarterback. Well, he's got to be big, and he's got to be able to throw it out of the stadium and all that. But if he has no idea where it's going, it doesn't help me. And the word he mentioned was accuracy. And to me, that's everything in a quarterback. Accuracy, ball placement, anticipatory skills. If you have a big, strong arm and you can do those things, I love you. Okay, that's great. But if you got a solid enough arm and you can do the accuracy stuff, to me, that's the most important part. And so, you know, you talk about Richardson, but I thought that was pretty cool. And the perfect opponent to put him out there. You know what I mean? I saw Brian Flores go, you know, we're going to start Tua, but we'll do it against the Rams, because that'll work out. You know what I'm saying? You know, and these are things like, coach, what are you doing? And so in this kind of game, I know Richardson got tweaked and left and came back and all that, but it's pretty cool to get that playing time at that moment.
Yeah, no question. And, you know, I think the thing too was, I mean, when Richardson got tweaked, he came in and his first pass, you talk about poise, a bullet down the sideline to Ricky Pearsall for 22 yards. So he didn't show any jitters during a point in the game where, you know, the game was still somewhat, you know, it was, I think, a 14-3 game at that point and so forth. And he came in the second quarter and performed well in that live period, and then came back in the third quarter through a 62-yard touchdown pass. And accuracy, poise, I think, stood out. But, you know, son of an NFL quarterback, I think that's pretty good, Big O. When you look at that, the bloodlines are really good. And you talk about accuracy. Kyle Trask was a plenty accurate quarterback at Florida. Didn't have the biggest arm, you know, certainly led him to the SEC championship game. So those are all encouraging signs. And it's just encouraging to know that you have a guy, in case something happens to Anthony Richardson, that you have a guy that can step in and has a little bit of, you know, some snaps under his belt and appears to have a little bit of poise and confidence about him.
Kevin, I was wondering, and I know we're going to break down the games a little bit more later, but I was just kind of curious. You watched Missouri and had Georgia on the brink, and now the Gators have Missouri coming up. Like, what, when you watch that game, what do you think of, what's your first thought about Florida and how they match up with Missouri?
Well, I think that the line of scrimmage matchup is interesting to me, because Missouri's defensive front was really impressive against Georgia. It was really whipping them for three quarters until they kind of wore down a little bit and Georgia made its comeback. But on the flip side, Missouri has some O-line issues, but Florida has a weak defensive line. But Florida's had a very good offensive line this season. They've only allowed 3 sacks all year. I think it helps having the mobile quarterback like Richardson dance around out of trouble a little bit, but still, this is the foundation of what Billy Napier is trying to build, starts up front with the offensive line. He brought in the preseason All-American Osiris Torrance from Louisiana, and he certainly hasn't disappointed as well. So the line of scrimmage, the offensive line for Florida, they've only allowed, 3 sacks again in 5 games. That's second best in the SEC. So that kind of bodes well for Florida in this matchup. I think the big question is now, can Florida's defense, which has been inconsistent, and they allowed 411 yards against Eastern Washington. I mean, they didn't play great. To correct you, Big O, was actually 52-17. They let up a couple of garbage touchdowns in the end. But, can Florida's defensive line create some havoc and make some big plays against a Missouri offensive line that apparently is having some struggles?
And notice how Ira stayed away from the Eastern Washington questions, because he's like me. Did the game really happen? he just moved on right away to Missouri. All right, so let's move over to Tallahassee and let's go talk to Ira Schofield from WarChant.com. And so, you guys were reporting last week that the practices weren't that really impressive overall, that things were throughout the week there at FSU, and then the performance was a little and I wonder if the same disease that may be happening in Tallahassee, I'm not sure, but it has festered at the University of Miami for, I would say, Manny will probably agree with me, a little over 15-17 years, that a lot of these kids, it doesn't take a lot for them to carry somebody else's accomplishments, and they feel like they arrived. So did Florida State get too big ahead with the early success going into this game, that they weren't necessarily as sharp preparing, and then the performance against Wake Forest followed the practices? Walk us through all of that, sir.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. And, I asked Mike Norvell about it after the game because, the practices last week weren't great. And he even remarked about it at the time. And we are able to watch practices. I didn't think Jordan Travis in the passing game was very sharp either of the days we were out there. It just seemed like it was like a little bit just something off. And you couldn't really put your finger on it. He defended the players and said it wasn't a lack of effort. So that would make you think it's not getting the big head. But I think you might be onto something, because sometimes when you're playing well and you're having success or you're winning games, you let the details slip. And you kind of think, I'm winning because I'm good. And this team's winning because we're good. And you got to remember, no, it's because of all those little things you're doing and the emphasis you put on those little things. And I think that may have slipped last week. We were out there today. You could tell the coaching staff was really trying to ramp up the intensity, telling the running backs to make sure they're going full speed on every drill. The offensive linemen make sure they're being aggressive and assertive. They felt like they were a little tentative in that game. So I don't know that it was a something you could say it's a lack of effort last week, but I do wonder if maybe there was just some slippage in terms of
The sharpness.
Exactly.
Ira, obviously I drove up there for the game and covered it for The Athletic, so I got a chance to see those guys firsthand. To be honest with you, I think this Wake Forest is just such an unbelievably well-coached team, and that slow mesh system, I really think that you'd like to see more teams adopt it. Miami might want to steal a page from these guys because it was so effective against FSU. All that said, there are some guys that have been banged up for Florida State, key guys. Are any of them going to be back this week? Because it's obviously an important game.
Yeah, and that is part of it. The defensive line coming into the season, we thought Florida State might have one of the better defensive lines in the ACC, not probably up there with Clemson, but in that next tier. Two of them were out. Fabian Lovett was out. Jared Verse was limited. He ended up coming in and playing about 20 snaps, but that's about a quarter of the game. And then on the offensive line, Robert Scott, the offensive tackle, left tackle, was out. I think there's a decent chance Robert Scott will be back at left tackle. Jared Verse came out of that game in good shape. They feel like he didn't have any kind of setback, and he'll play more and more as the weeks go on. So those two are really positive. The one remaining one is Fabian Lovett, a defensive tackle. They feel like he's an NFL guy, probably their best defensive lineman. And he's been out now for 3 or 4 weeks. I don't think he'll be back this week. I think maybe they get him back for Clemson, which would be great. But I don't know right now if I would say he's going to be back this week. But the other two are definitely positive developments.
All right, Ira, I got to ask. So, you know, they're kind of known for this. So I'm just wondering, when you sign on to be a kicker at FSU, are you required to go wide right and wide left? I'm just, you know, because they got another mess going on there. And there's the coach going, let me see what the hell is going on here. So what's going on with the kicker? Is it something in the water? Is it a requirement in the whole thing? Hey, here's your scholarship, kid. Are you going right or are you going left?
I think you got a little amnesia, because they've also had some good ones. Roberto Aguayo was pretty good. Sebastian Janikowski was pretty good. You know, it's funny because back in the day, you're right, the wide rights. About
the young guys right now taking after those.
No, I know. I got you for sure. And, this guy, he's in his head right now. Ryan Fitzgerald started last year. He was 10 of 13 as a redshirt freshman. You felt like, okay, he missed some kicks, but you felt like, okay, he's got a chance maybe to be pretty good. And he's 4 out of 9 right now, and his longest field goal of the season was 30 yards. He missed a 29-yarder in that game. They threw him out there at the end to kick a 55-yarder. It might as well have been 85 yards, and he missed that. And, yeah, it's right now they're not saying it's an open competition, but they're not as adamant that he's their kicker right now. So they have a walk-on or two that they may look at this week. But it's a mess because they actually went for 2 a couple times instead of kicking the extra points. As you get into these games like NC State and Clemson, where every point is going to be so valuable, it's definitely a tough situation right now.
So I heard sorority houses have their guys like lined up trying to try out. I don't know. By the way, I thought it was interesting, Manny. You covered FSU, and I thought what was really cool is when you're hearing the coach from FSU say a lot of the things coach of the University of Miami was saying when coming off these disappointing losses, accountability. Mm-hmm. That seems to be a term at Tallahassee right now, coming off this loss. They want accountability from the last week, from the practices to the games. And then obviously Mario was all about that, dude. He was like, no, we got to look in the mirror. We got to look in the mirror, you know, and all that. So he made no excuses and pointed 0 fingers. So I'm wondering if you kind of saw a little bit of the same stuff going on there on both stops.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is year 3, right, for Norvell over there. And I just think he's got his imprint on the team now. I think, you know, Mario, for as strong a personality that he has, you know, you could tell 4 games in, this team still isn't playing the way that he wants them to. I do think Norvell, you know, the players in terms of understanding him, understanding what he wants, I think that's been established. They're just a little bit further advanced. I'll tell you the one thing that impressed me, that doesn't happen here at Miami, and maybe I'm dead wrong, Ira. You've been up there a lot longer than I have, but that's the first time I've covered a non-Miami Florida State game in Tallahassee. Even though they lost that game, there was no cussing, there was no booing, there was no nasty attitude from the fan base in the stadium, unlike here at Miami, when they have no problem booing Mario in game 3 or 4. And, you know, not that you shouldn't boo, but I will
quarter. Say, it was the 6th quarter where they booed him. What are you talking about, game 3 or 4? They have to boo his ass.
But I will say, and I don't know if you agree with me, both of you guys can chime in on this, but, I mean, that hurts recruiting. And when there's no booing, there's guys there watching that game. It's a different environment than when you watch a game at Miami.
Yeah, no, they've had their moments. You know, last year, for example, when FSU had Mackenzie Milton and everybody wanted that storybook ending with Mackenzie Milton. And when Jordan went into a game, you could hear some groans from the fans and things like that. And if this kicker situation goes on much longer, you might hear some boos. But no, I mean, I think the reality is, I don't know why it's in our – look, I get it. Sometimes I think the fans are booing the coach, which, you know, hey, they get paid millions of dollars. They deserve it. But you're right, man. If you're a recruit sitting there and listening to that, how do you take that? How do you feel like this is a place I want to be? And it happens at a lot of schools.
Well, I think also for me, just to throw in my theory, Miami's a pro town.
Right.
It's not really a college town, you know. And I've talked about this many times. Go walk onto the University of Miami campus, and a lot of those faces, they're not Americans. They're coming in to get their degree, and they're flying right back to their country with that education, and they're moving on. So that happens, and it's such a small student base that it really relies on regular fans. Right. So they treat the University of Miami like if they were the Miami Dolphins or the Miami Heat or the Panthers or whatever. And I think they get, and it's not a college town where they're kind of geared where that's the centerpiece of that town, because there is no pro teams or anything like that. So it's really difficult. In Gainesville and Tallahassee, you can have a true college-like atmosphere. And most of us, let's be honest now, most of us can send our kids to Florida, Florida State, you know, FIU, FAU, you know, state schools. Most of us can't afford to send our kids to the University of Miami. It's just way too much money. So it takes a different caliber kid. Those kids probably aren't really hooked to the sporting side of it. And it's just a different atmosphere for them. I think USC might suffer some of the same stuff. I'm not exactly sure because I'm not out there, but I kind of get the sense that they have a little bit of the same disease that we have too down here. I don't know.
You know, it's funny you say that, because my oldest daughter is a really smart kid and toured all three schools during her recruiting process as a student. She's a really smart kid and got into all three. And I went with her on the tours to each of the schools. Miami is the only one where during all of the presentations, they never really showed athletic stuff. Like, it was all about the academics. And I was blown away by it. I was like, oh my God, of course you're going to go here. Because it's such a, and in Florida, they showed these videos of Billy Donovan and all the basketball success and football success. Florida State, obviously, their football stuff. But Miami, man, it was all academics. And those kids in those presentations, yeah, I don't know if they'll ever go to a game at the stadium.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a weird atmosphere for the University of Miami. I really feel bad for them in that sense. All right. We get ready for our second segment. We're going to look around the NFL. We're going to talk about maybe what could be a coach that is stealing money without a mask and a gun. We can also talk about, we're going to play fantasy college head coach, because we've got some openings. And then we'll talk about the nemesis in the ACC. So we've got all of that coming up Saturday, 4:00, UNC and Miami. I'm not sure what Vegas knows that I don't. Somehow Miami is favored by 4 in that game. Over and under is 66. At noon, Missouri is taking on Florida. The Gators are favored by 11. The over and under is 55.5 points. And at 8:00, baby, prime time. Yeah, Ira Schoffel will be done at 2 in the morning. Florida State. NC State is favored by 3 in this one, too. So this should be a really interesting game. All right, we're going to take a break. You are listening to the State of Florida Gridiron Roundtable on the Sports Talk 305 Network. This podcast replay is brought to you by Caneswear.com. For all your Canes, Dolphins, and Heat needs, visit them at 2511 South University Drive in Davie. Free shipping with online orders over $99. Go to Caneswear.com at Miami Fanwear. That's the spot where South Florida fans shop. There we are. We're back. Thank you for joining us here on the program. All right, gentlemen, let's take a look around at college football. Let's talk about some of these hot button topics. And Kevin, we'll start in your conference here. Texas A&M, are they getting the mileage that they expected out of Jimbo? I mean, he's 37-16 overall, which in the SEC, that is not acceptable. They just got crushed by Mississippi State 42-24. So I know he's not going to really get fired this year or anything like that, but I'm just wondering, how long do they wait? Does the hot seat start maybe next year if it continues at this pace? You know, victories against Arkansas, Miami, and Sam Houston State are not impressive. If we really look at it, I don't think Arkansas is that good, and Miami was definitely overrated. So you tell me, man, you start this conversation off. What do you think happens there at Texas A&M? When does it feel like Jimbo is standing on that bonfire they light up before every game?
Yeah. Hey, you know, and Big O, you know, think about this. If that field goal doesn't boink off the top of the upright against Arkansas, that could be two wins. So right. It's been really like I said, one of those seasons for Texas A&M where you come in with very high expectations. You do have that number one recruiting class. Of course, they're all young now. That might pay dividends 3 or 4 years down the road. But, you know, I looked this up, Big O. His buyout, if it were to end today, it would be $85 million. If it were to end at the end of next million, it'd be $76.8 million.
My Lord, that's a Hassan Whiteside contract. Yeah. That's like or maybe, you know what? They could put him on the Bobby Bonilla plan, and he could just get money for the rest of his life, and then his kids and his other kids and so on and so forth. I don't know.
How do you fire a guy? You know, Gus Malzahn is the biggest buyout in history, $21.45 million. I mean, that's three times that if you fire him next season. I mean,
guys close to that $20 million number also?
I was going to say, that's about 4.5 times Willie Taggart's buyout, which just about bankrupted this program.
Well, I think between McElwain, Mullen, and I'm trying to remember Muschamp. They probably paid out. Florida probably paid out in the neighborhood of $30 million of buyouts over the last decade. So it's just the thing now with agents and so forth, and you got to protect the coaches. And I think with in the SEC, which prints money, certainly the second richest contract besides the Big Ten. Some of these schools can afford it. Texas A&M has got a lot of money, and they've got a lot of donors. If you've been over to that campus, I mean, the facilities are immaculate. It's oil money, it's tech money there. There's a lot of money to go around, but it would still be a lot to swallow to give up on Jimbo this soon. But some of their fans are restless.
Well, and what's funny is,
hey, listen, you want to give me $80 million and tell me I suck and leave? I suck. I'm out of here.
Well, that's like Orgeron, what he said. But yeah, that's the thing with Jimbo is it's all the same complaints FSU fans when he had here about the offense. It's stuck in the old ages. He won't play this new style of offensive football. They can't score. And so now people are saying, well, maybe he'll hire an offensive coordinator, or maybe they'll make him turn over the offense. Man, they're crazy. If they try to make him turn over his offense, that is his pride and joy. He will walk out. He'll say, give me my check. And I'll walk out the door just like Ed O. There's no way he would ever hand over the offense to somebody else just to keep his job.
Yeah, they have a lot of quarterback problems there too. And Max Johnson, they're trying to see if he's the answer, but he has not done a good job developing the quarterback position, since Kellen Mond. I think that's been a huge issue.
Well, I was going to say, didn't he inherit Kellen Mond? I think the issue is he's recruiting a bunch of duds at that position over and over again.
Since Jameis, he is not. Yeah. That was his downfall at Florida State. He didn't sign a good quarterback after Jameis.
And it is. And everybody he's brought to Texas A&M, I mean, since he got Kellen Mond, I mean, none of those guys are cutting it.
His record is the same as Sumlin.
Yeah,
it's like there's no difference. It's really amazing. And considering all the money they're spending there, that is one ugly situation there. All right, let's move on to topic number two. Gentlemen, we talked about last week about how the shelf life of a head coach, it's really, it's difficult, it's short, and now we have Wisconsin, Nebraska, Arizona State, Georgia Tech, Colorado already open. More to come because we've got another round or two of coaches that are already on the hot seat as it is. So let's have a little fun here. What candidate should be employed in one of these jobs, one that should move up from a current employed job, somebody that's unemployed, maybe an assistant coach that really deserves it, that deserves a shot at one of these programs, and why? Give me whichever one of you guys wants to start out first. Ira, go ahead, start it off.
Well, I'll start with the guy that Florida State just lost to, Dave Clawson at Wake Forest. Now, I don't know if his system and his style would work in any school, but it would be cool to see him rewarded and his staff rewarded with like a real big fan base. Cause the same problem, like what you were talking about with Miami, at least Miami has the community that rallies around the team when they're doing well. Wake Forest, it's a small private school. You saw the crowd when they played Clemson, it was half orange. The whole stadium was orange because they just can't support the program. What he does there is amazing. I could not have been more impressed by how well they played, how smart they were. I'd love to see him at a bigger program, maybe a Nebraska or somewhere like that. I don't know that he would succeed. I don't know. I don't know if he would succeed with the highest level players, if he could manage the personalities that come with the five stars and all that. But, man, that guy, he should be playing more meaningful, I believe, in a more meaningful environment than Wake Forest.
Boy, but you didn't hold back. You gave him Nebraska. That seems to become the job now. That's like almost impossible to turn around now. I mean, it's like a Venus flytrap for coaches. Just that's it. You're sucked in. You're done. It's over, bro. Wow, that was tough. You really have respect for him if he can turn around Nebraska.
He might be the guy. He might be the guy.
All right, gentlemen.
Well, I was going to throw out two names. One of them's near and dear to Florida State fans, obviously, Deion Sanders.
Knew where that was going.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like the obvious one. And I think, you know,
between what program?
Auburn hasn't fired their coach yet, but everybody's expecting that to happen. So I've heard Auburn, obviously the city of Atlanta, you know, Deion enjoyed his time there, had a great time. There's a lot of fun places to be in Atlanta for a guy like Deion. And so I could see Georgia Tech, depending on who they hire as their athletic
director. Oh, no. You know what I thought? Arizona State, dude.
Yeah. That's a good one.
That's another great
Marty's
one too.
School. It has the colors of FSU in a way, you know. So he goes there at Arizona State. He has, because that's after you guys gave your suggestion, I didn't think anybody was going to come up with Deion.
Yeah.
But I thought Deion, because Deion, you know, Wisconsin, Nebraska. Hmm. No, Deion's not going to live there and all. But Arizona State is a fun school, and that's a fun conference. And Lord knows he can help save. Damn conference. I thought Arizona State. See, G-Tech, he has to – that's kind of like the Wake Forest thing. You actually have to recruit kids that want to hit the books. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a little bit more difficult there. But Arizona State, I mean, party school, Deion. I kind of love that, man.
The one thing about Deion is – and the reason a lot of people didn't know if he'd be successful as a coach was because nobody knew if he would want to – go out on the recruiting trail. Like, Deion Sanders really going to, you know, kill it on the recruiting trail? But what's happened is you don't have to anymore. He's just Deion. And in the world of NIL and all this, man, they'll come to him, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. What do you think, Kevin?
I'll give you a few names, kind of a little more under the radar. One is at Kansas, Lance Leopold. The job he's doing there, 5-0 at that school, is nothing short of remarkable. He's a guy that's from Wisconsin Whitewater, Division III school. He has Wisconsin roots. So if Jim Leonard doesn't turn out well at Wisconsin, I could see him definitely going there. He'd be a good fit there. He could be a good fit at Nebraska, one of those two Big Ten schools. Another guy, a very bright young offensive coach at Coastal Carolina, Jamie Chadwell, I think deserves to go somewhere. He's a 5-0 this year, got a bright mind. He would be a very interesting choice, you know, maybe even at a school like Arizona State or Georgia Tech. He's got some Southern roots. He's from Tennessee or Auburn. That could work as well. Maybe he'd be a guy that would get his SEC opportunity.
I got one more for you.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
He's the offensive coordinator of the Buffalo Bills.
Oh, Ken, break your laptop, Dorsey.
Ken, break your laptop, Dorsey. Hey, listen, okay. if the Bills win the Super Bowl this year, and you know they might have a good shot at that, you don't think there's going to be a lot of colleges looking to bring him in and hire him as a head coach, a guy who obviously had success at the collegiate level at Miami, very smart. I think that's a guy that could earn himself a whole lot of money, even if he doesn't want to coach at the college level. He'd have to at least listen to what people had.
Yeah,
to
but I every time a recruit wants to get into the to the transfer portal, there goes a laptop, there goes an iPad. It's gonna be really expensive to keep them around in that. You know what I mean? You know, just hearing all these kids pout, and here he is breaking stuff all over the place. I don't know, man. I don't know. You better get some real good. I don't know, that Apple Care. Boy, you better have some serious Apple Care if you're gonna keep Ken Dorsey around. All right, one more thing before we leave this topic. Really quick answers from each of you. What the hell's going on in Nebraska? Like, we're all old enough that we grew up that Nebraska was a powerhouse. We know that they have the support, they have the alumni base, they always had the money, the campus, all that stuff. What is it? What happened with Nebraska? Why has everyone? I mean, you just mentioned Kansas now, Kevin. Nobody's won since they got rid of Mangino. And he was, I know he had his issues, but my God, it's kind of like the South Florida thing. You got rid of, what's the name of the guy?
Levitt.
And he was a badass over there. Like, wow, you let your program falls apart. What happened in Nebraska? Because we figured that was one of those schools that great coaches would just want to go there to keep the whole tradition going, yet it has completely died. And no one, I mean, Tennessee's getting a little resurrection. You see Kansas, you know, other schools are still getting some resurrection, Texas a little bit. But, dude, Nebraska is a ghost town. Answers, please.
I think what happened to them, too, is, you know, if you remember Nebraska in the 80s and 90s, the huge weight room, right, the emphasis on the line of scrimmage, they've lost that a lot. They've lost a lot of their toughness there. And I, you know, I don't know, you know, if it's strength coaches, if it's, you know, just the coaching in general, or, you know, how they practice there. But it, the line of scrimmage, when I watched them in the Big Ten the last few years with Indiana, that was an area where they were really lacking. And I just think it's a lot harder to recruit there now. And I don't know if the tradition carries the weight that it did in the 80s and 90s. But, you know, that being said, they've had some star guys there. Wandale Robinson was a guy I really liked. And then he transferred to Kentucky. He went to Kentucky, and now he's in the NFL with the New York Giants. So they've had their share of guys there. Adrian Martinez, look at what he's doing at Kansas State. So it's not like they haven't had their star guys every once in a while. But you're right. Something is kind of off there. And I think it begins with the toughness in the line of scrimmage. They haven't prioritize
Kevin,
that
they're winning in Syracuse. They're winning in Syracuse. That's yep. The North Pole. They're winning.
Okay. So, yep. I mean, I get it that it's Nebraska and it's hard to recruit, but, like, you know, it's there's other places that aren't very sexy and they've kind of made it, you know, a place to go in. But wow, it's weird. How about you guys? You want to take a stab?
I was just going to say, just, you know, going back in my when Kevin talked about the 80s and 90s. I mean, I just remember that the Nebraska team that played Florida, you know, just the athletes and, you know, Lawrence Phillips. And I mean, it was just those defensive guys, Peter. And I mean, it was just it was dudes. They had dudes everywhere on the field. And you just don't nobody fears them anymore. And what if you're at Florida State, and I think a lot of schools, you look at them as a cautionary tale of if you let it go too long and nobody remembers what you were, because I don't know that anybody like no college football recruit has any idea what we're talking about when we talk about that in Nebraska. And that's gotta be tough, man. Like that, you know, it's like they got to pull out the VHS tapes to show them how, when they used to be good.
Wow. That sucks.
Sounds like a team that I cover.
on the brink. Yeah. Mario better save it.
All I was going to add was I think leaving the conference, going to the Big Ten, affected them on the recruiting trail. I think a lot of those kids that were coming come from the state of Texas, right? Came from that area. And now, you know, they're playing teams up in the Midwest. Parents don't want to fly out to Ohio State and Rutgers and Maryland. And I just think they're not recruiting the same way because they changed conferences. And I think that could be a preview of what happens to UCLA and USC. I know they're taking it for granted right now, but
identity. Yeah. Yep. Identity. Yeah. Yeah. You're no longer a West Coast team. And so, yeah, it's all of that. Yeah. It's really weird, man, because Nebraska was such an amazing power. All right. We will continue here on the State of Florida Gridiron Roundtable. We are going to get a couple of previews here. We got three big games going on this week across the state. We will talk about that when we come back right here on the State of Florida Gridiron Roundtable on the Sports Talk 305 Network.
This podcast replay is brought to you by EssentialMovingExperts.com. 5-star rated, 25 years of experience in the moving business. Family owned and operated. They offer free 30-day storage. Fully licensed, bonded, and insured. Mention the Big O and get $150 off. Moving was never so easy. EssentialMovingExperts.com.
We are back. By the way, I get entertained sometimes by the folks watching and chatting sometimes, and we got the UCF folks that, you know, they give themselves titles. And so I just want you to know, I don't mean it. I wish everyone well, USF, UCF, FIU, FAU, all these other teams in the state, but the only three teams that are going to have a shot at a real national title, not the stuff that you give yourself, the ones you earn, it's going to be Miami, Florida, and Florida State. Okay, so for those of you out there that are UCF fans, hey, man, you've done a great job building up that program, but you got to win something first, okay? So, you know, I love your passion. I get it. It's just misplaced. That's all. All right. Let's start off segment number three. You know, sometimes you got to put them in their place. All right. Let's start off with the first one. Let's go with UNC in Miami because I'm still trying to figure out what the hell Vegas knows over us, because I would never have figured that Miami was going to be favored by 4 points in this game. Maybe even, maybe a point, but probably UNC favored by a point or two, because that offense is lighting it up, Manny. Miami has no secondary. I think my grandmother can get behind that secondary. DJ Ivy must have naked pictures of somebody in that coaching staff, because they keep putting him out there every single week, and he keeps, you know, looking like Paul Warfield.
Brown.
J.B. Brown, or what was the other one that I'm trying? Paul Langford, not Warfield. Paul Langford for the Dolphins. Number 44, one of the best toast artists that you'll ever remember. Just give him some butter and then I'll move on. So talk to me here. What the hell? I can't explain this one. What do they know that we don't?
Well, they must be giving Kevin Steele some credit left over from his days at Auburn, because when he went head-to-head with Phil Longo, and Phil Longo was the coordinator at Ole Miss, he beat him 2 years in a row in 2017 and 2018. And, you know, Phil Longo had some good receivers there, A.J. Brown, D.K. Metcalf, Van Jefferson. Those guys turned out to be pretty good players, made it to the NFL, and yet, you know, somehow, some way, Kevin Steele and that Auburn defense were able to slow guys down. So maybe that's it. Maybe they're going on that history, but I agree with you. I don't see how you could pick Miami in this game to be a favorite, much less win. I think just all the momentum is in North Carolina's favor. They played their best game of the season. They're coming off of that a few days ago, against Virginia Tech, where they held them to under 100 yards rushing. So, and they've got talent on that defense. They've just got a lot of young players on that defense that have to sort of figure things out. So, and Drake May's fourth in the country in quarterback rating. Right now, I mean, this is a kid who's in his first year, 19 touchdowns, one interception, just running an efficient, high-scoring offense. And I don't see what Las Vegas knows, unless, again, like I told you earlier today, unless Miami's unveiling the Wildcat on Saturday, they're just going to hold on to the ball for 50 minutes and somehow keep the North Carolina offense off the field. I don't see how Miami should be favored in this.
And you talked a little bit about it at the start of the show. They are littered with injuries all over the place on this team. So they're not very good, and yet they're going to be missing some of their better players.
Yeah, and really, you know, the injuries I'm looking for, Tyreek Stevenson, who's their number one cornerback, you know, I heard last week that it wasn't a good situation for him. We'll see. The coaches are the best coverage and the best blocking that I've seen from Miami all season happened on Monday. When the coaches were covering up the injuries, they just did not want to talk about it. I mean, the stiff arms we got from them were unbelievable. We'll find out Saturday soon enough. But yes, Tyreek Stevenson, you know, Daryl Porter, who should probably be their number two cornerback, was kind of building towards that. I don't know where he's at in his injury. He kind of messed up his shoulder. You got the two running backs. You got Elijah Royal. Those five guys could all be out this week. And if that's the case, I mean, even a bigger, tougher task for the team.
Wow. And by the way, any other nuggets in this matchup that you're worried about that Canes fans should be looking at, or something that you like in this matchup that you think they could take advantage of?
Well, I mean, the one thing North Carolina has sort of struggled with all season is the running game in terms of stopping it. I mentioned that they had their best, you know, run performance against Virginia Tech. If Thad Franklin can run the ball successfully, and I think he can. I mean, Miami was running the ball well until they ran into Middle Tennessee State. But if they can get back to being that kind of a team, and I think that's the key to victory here. You're going to need Tyler Van Dyke to make some big plays here and there. But I think the key really is just to keep North Carolina's offense off the field as much as you can, sort of disrupt their rhythm. Because what happens is, you know, their defense gives up points so quickly, the offense never really has to worry about it. They're right back out there. So I think, you know, for Miami's case, playing some ball control, might be the key to disrupting them. I think that's the key to the game for Miami.
Yeah, if they can punish him with Thad, maybe they got a shot there to keep that offense, you know, off the field a little bit there. All right. Give me the pick. Miami is favored by 4, the over and under 66.
Yeah.
What do you like here in this game?
I would take North Carolina. I'm going to be conservative here. I'm going to say 42-28 UNC. I think Miami's offense scores some points. I think Tyler Van Dyke plays better. I just think Miami's not good enough to win this game.
All right, we move on. Saturday night, under the lights, 8 o'clock. Florida State and NC State. NC State favored by 3. The over and under is 50.5 in this one. Ira, when I look at this offense, NC State, the spirit of Tony Sperano lives. They love to kick a lot of field goals in this offense. So it's not a great offense, but the problem is – FSU, not a great defense either. So will this be a problem that might give NC State a more of an opportunity to finish some of these drives?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of when I was listening to Kevin talk about the Florida-Missouri matchup, I was thinking it sounds similar to, I think, what we're going to see Florida State, NC State. NC State's offensive line is not very good. Clemson's defensive line, of course, just destroyed their offensive line. And that's been a big problem for NC State's offense. Devin Leary was one of the top quarterbacks in the country last year, but their offensive line's been bad, and he doesn't have quite the same skill around him. But the problem is Florida State's defensive line, because it's banged up, has not been all that impressive. So you don't know if they can take advantage of it. And the secondary is okay, but they're not, you know, they can't cover guys forever. And that was part of the problem against Wake Forest. Is Sam Hartman had a lot of time on some of those third down throws. So, I think that's going to be a challenge. If Florida State – I think Florida State's offense will have some success up there. But the defense has to play really well for them to have a chance in this game, a lot better than they did this past week against Wake Forest.
You know, as Jordan Travis has played well, but I kind of look at it that maybe one of the strengths for FSU, maybe running the ball, like on a game like this, on the road, and you know, when I'm watching App State at Texas A&M, since we were talking about this earlier, and they are pounding the crap out of Texas A&M, and they continue to punch them in the mouth, that is not just demoralizing for the players on the field, but it demoralizes the stadium. And so I'm wondering, if I'm FSU here, I want to help out Travis. I want to make his life a little easier. I think that FSU running game could be a real key in this game. You tell me.
I mean, it would be great too. And I think that, you know, again, from the mentality of practice today, the way that offensive line coach Alex Atkins was really pushing his players to be aggressive and be more assertive at the point of attack, that makes me feel like you're right. That's what they want to do. But I really think the key to that, if they are going to run the football more, is Jordan has to keep it sometimes too. Because, you know, partly because they're trying to prove he's a passing quarterback, partly because he got banged up a couple weeks ago. Against Wake Forest, he never even thought about keeping it on the RPO. He kept giving the ball. He needs to keep it for himself sometimes, maybe even some designed runs where doesn't even have a read to make, just to put pressure on the defense, because that's what opens things up for the other running backs. And if he's not a threat to run, then I think it's going to be a tough time for those other running backs. I do think you're right. I think they have to run it a lot, especially on the road in a tough environment. But Jordan has to run it too, assuming he's healthy enough to do it, because he was banged up a couple weeks ago. Hey,
he got rid of the brace. He's Speedy Gonzalez now.
He did. You're right.
Oh, that's it. It was that big ass brace that was stopping him. Now he's going to take off now.
We'll
that's
see. It.
He's like Josh Allen now. He's just going to run all over people and everything.
We'll see. NC State's defensive line is legit. And one of the key guys who had a big game against them last year is a former FSU football player, Corey Durden, who played defensive tackle for here, transferred to NC State. He's still there. He's at nose guard, and he's a problem as well.
All right. Give us any concerns that you have going into this game in this matchup.
Yeah, you know, I'm really – the biggest thing to me is, can the offense operate – and really, I think it's going to be the most hostile crowd they faced. I mean, they did go on the road to Louisville, but that wasn't a great Louisville crowd. Louisville has gotten off to a tough start this season. It wasn't a packed house. That team, I think the fan base is lukewarm to cold on Scott Satterfield. So it wasn't a real hostile environment. And then the LSU game was half and half. It was in New Orleans – but half the crowd was FSU fans. It was like a bowl environment. So NC State is a sneaky, tough place to play, and I don't know. There you go, the Wolfpack, baby. It is they're right on top of you. Those fans get liquored up. It's 8 o'clock at night, and, man, they are those fans are there to release all their hostility for having to live in Raleigh, North Carolina. And so it is hot and intense in there, and that's going to be the question. Can Florida State handle that? This is, to me, the most hostile environment they'll have played in so far.
All right. Interesting. All right, so give me a pick. In this game, NC State is favored by 3. The over and under is 50.5. What do you think happens in this game?
Yeah, man, I'm gonna say NC State. I think NC State's gonna win it 27-21. I just have concerns the offense can score enough and the defense can get enough stops, and the environment. I'd say 27-21 NC State.
Our insiders 0-2 right now. We'll see if Kevin's got the bravery badge for this week. All right, Kevin, Mizzou and Florida. You look at Mizzou and they are what, like 7 points away from undefeated, playing tough against Auburn, tough against Georgia. It's a team that it's got a lot of grit to it. So Florida better walk into this game ready to get into a fight is kind of what I feel like.
Yeah, Big O. I think when you look at, how Missouri performed last week against Georgia and really had them on the ropes, the number one team in the country, if that doesn't get your attention, I don't know what will. And I'm going to throw a Get Smart line at you. Would you believe if I told you it's been 364 days since Florida won its last SEC game? October 9th, 2021 against Vanderbilt. 6 in a row, which is kind of crazy if you think about it, going back to the implosion last year under Dan Mullen. So, this is really a critical game for Florida, too. I mean, they're 0-2 in the league now. They really need kind of a pick-me-up here, and this is an opportunity. I'm surprised the line seems a little high to me. I think this is going to be a much closer game than you think.
I agree.
Of the fact that, because of how, Missouri performed against Georgia. I mean, I think that they are.
And Auburn, they played Auburn tough. Yeah.
Exactly, had him on the ropes. I think, for the bright side, if you're a Gator fan, you've got Anthony Richardson coming off 2 really good games in a row, that 75-yard touchdown pass. I know it was Eastern Washington, but, the fact that he looks like he's in a little bit of a groove now, he's starting to mature, throwing the football, a lot more in sync with his receivers, that's got to be a positive sign. This offensive line, that'll be the huge key of the game. Can they protect them against a Missouri defensive front that's got some dudes seems to always have some dudes, right? They've had Michael Sam in the past. They've had, Sheldon Richards. Now they have this guy, Isaiah McGuire, who's projected as an NFL draft pick. So that's going to be the really key of the game, I think, is, protecting Anthony Richardson and being able to establish the line of scrimmage. And I think if they do that on homecoming, they're gonna finally break that schneid and get a conference win.
Well, Mizzou, one of the things also that's kind of been a bugaboo for them this year is mistakes, man. They will commit penalties. They're in the middle of the pack in the NCAA when it comes to the rankings. So they will make mistakes. Can Florida play a clean football game and be the team that doesn't make the mistakes? Because Mizzou seems to be one that will give you some opportunities throughout the game.
Yeah, and really the key is to be turnover free too. And Anthony Richardson did that first play in the third quarter, did throw another pick. It was kind of a punt. I mean, it was into coverage. It was a deep ball that he took a shot on. But, that's of his five games this year, the only game where he has not committed a turnover is Utah, the first game, where arguably one of his most impressive. So I think that's going to be a key to ball security, taking care of the ball, and maybe to force a turnover too under, Brady Cook, who's an inexperienced quarterback. He can scramble a little bit too. Florida's got to be, mindful of that, spying that, staying in their gaps, making sure that he doesn't break off those runs. And the defense too, I just think in general is a concern. Trey Dean is he missed last week. He's a little banged up starting safety. Ventrell Miller sat out the Eastern Washington game, but probably just as a precaution. But, he played against Tennessee. I would expect him to be back. So those are a couple of little injury concerns going into the matchup.
All right, Kevin, give me the prediction. Florida by 11 points in this one. The over and under is 55.5. I don't know. I'm not really jiving with Vegas on most of these spreads on all these three games. So
I'll say Florida's going to win, but they're not going to cover. I think it's going to be a 21-17 game. Gators are going to pull it out. I just don't think Missouri has enough offensively to exploit it. Even for as inconsistent as Florida's defense has been, I think they will rise to the occasion somewhat in this game, given some of the problems on Missouri's offensive line.
Yeah, they're not a great passing team. They're not a great passing team, Missouri. So yeah, that would be something. I like your thinking that it'll be a low scoring game. It's really not going to be a high. It's not going to be where they're normally at. What are the Gators averaging, about 33 points a game? I don't think you're going to be in that neighborhood. You're right about that.
Yeah, and don't forget, some of that was inflated by the Eastern Washington, game. If it happened, it didn't happen. I mean, 52. So they've been in the mid to high 20s, I would say, most of the season against regular competition.
Well, when you play at Sandals, you must entertain. So these are the things you have to do, Kevin. All right. So on behalf of Kevin Brockway, Ira Schoffel, Manny Navarro, Sean Stanley, who masters the entire platform every single day, I am Orlando Alzigary. Seminoles, Gators, and Canes fans, thank you for tuning in. We will catch you next week. You Canes fans, stay tuned, baby. Mike McCoy is coming up with the Miami Hurricanes Watch.